Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to our discussion of the Last Jedi bonus features. I'm Marie Claire Gould, your host, and with me today is Ty Black of Wit and Folly YouTube channel. Welcome, Ty!
Hello! Hi, Marie Claire. Glad to be back.
You're welcome back anytime. I've already told you this.
Awesome.
We'll just like show up randomly in Canada. Like, We decided that we would get together and actually discuss the bonus features in detail. Some of it might be kind of high level, just because, you know, I took a lot of notes, but that's okay. I think that it's just really important to really give a good understanding of what were the kind of key and important points that we found inside of the bonus features, and then, you know, discuss those. So we're going to go through the bonus features almost in order. We are skipping the John Williams music only play of the movie. Just for time, I did not get a chance to actually watch it. I love John Williams. I'm a huge fan of David W. Collins. I'm waiting for his analysis of it. But if you're waiting for a great analysis of the movie and the soundtrack, I would suggest checking out Sideshow Sound Radio. They have a great deep dive with actual composers who talk about their favorite compositions from The Last Jedi and how John Williams achieves exactly what he achieves. It's really wonderful, so I suggest checking that out, as well as all of their previous soundtrack reviews and deep dives. And of course, anything by David W. Collins is great.
Cool
stuff. They can do a much better job than Ty or I can do.
That's probably true.
Okay, so let's talk about the director commentary of The Last Jedi with Rian Johnson. What did you think, Ty?
I loved how Rian Johnson was, again, he always does this. He always feels like he's in over his head. He talks in a way that just sounds like every time he speaks, he's like, I can't believe I'm here. Like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe I made a Star Wars movie. And it's just so genuine. I think he said multiple times in the commentary about, like, no, this is the first scene we shot. And this is the first scene we shot. And it's, he just kind of gets, you know, a little, he's such a geek about it. And that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And generally, how he comes across is thoughtful. Like, he gets mm-hmm. Star Wars, he gets the Force, he gets the mythos. He gets storytelling from a character perspective, which I cannot tell you how important it is to ensure that your characters are not only not perfect, mm-hmm. but actually face real challenges that are personal to them. And that could feel very small, like Rey's story, which is a sense of belonging. It could feel small, or it could feel galactic sized, like Kylo's, where he literally makes the choice to become supreme leader of most of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he is dialed into that as a storyteller makes me incredibly happy. It is something that, although was present in the prequel trilogy, was less of a priority to George Lucas than how the story was being told, right?
Yeah.
What the story is and how it affects the characters was more important to Rian Johnson. And I said this when we did our review. You weren't there, unfortunately, Ty, because you don't live in the city. But when we did our review, I said, this is the Star Wars story that I never knew I always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of Rian Johnson. He is so thoughtful. He gets it. He was willing to stretch himself personally. And you can see that because he's like, I've never worked with this technology before. But it worked out because I had ILM, or I had Skywalker Sound, or I had this amazing crew that backed me up and made sure that I was successful. And that is not only the sign of a brilliant and thoughtful person, but also a great leader. And you get that from Kathleen mm-hmm. Kennedy. You get that from anyone who is talking about him. There's no hesitation. He is literally the best person ever.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, you brought up the ILM thing. I think he talks about ILM so many times in the commentary mm-hmm. about how he's like, oh, this is something they did. This is, you know, this is their product and everything. And on the same, in the same breath, like, it's really neat to see all of those people put so much heart and so much passion into creating his vision. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was like it, that relationship went both ways. And you can, I mean, you can so tell from the combination of the commentary and then all the rest of the bonus features, how everyone was so in tuned to what he was trying to do, even though it was different, even though it was, like you said, it was the story you didn't know that you wanted from Star Wars, but everyone wanted to create it.
Exactly. And you could tell, even like to do with the Canto Bite scene, you could tell with sometimes the Faviers, you could tell with even Mark Hamill. I mean, he straight up says it. I don't agree what you've done with my character. Yeah. You know, like I could tell that some people were like hesitant. And after watching the bonus features, I actually get the character of DJ a lot more, which during my review, I said was like the worst part of the movie. I didn't get him.
Really?
Yeah. No, I didn't understand why it had to be that type of character.
Oh, I see. I loved DJ. Oh,
well, that's a, I mean, that's the thing about Star Wars is like, I could love somebody, but
isn't that weird? I totally understand that.
But he loves Benicio del Toro, and he loves what he did to brought to the character. I just felt like for a character that was supposed to show moral ambiguity, temptation for Finn, he should have offered Finn to join him and leave. And that was the gap, I think, in the DJ character, in that like Rose was there like, you're my friend and I'm going to make sure that you end up like seeing the light. And DJ never once offered, Finn, come with me. You know, you'd be a great, you know, huckster and, you know, smuggler, scoundrel character. You'd be great after this whole First Order life. He never once like was actually the devil, which Ryan refers to him in the commentary as like this temptation. It was all soft temptation through what DJ represented, which never actually I felt correctly to actually fulfill that role with Finn.
I thought the line live free, don't join is like that's like who DJ is. So I don't think in reality it would have made sense for like Finn to join him or anything like that. But at the same time, I think it was the temptation was Finn running off in the beginning to go find Rey, to just be with Rey, just get out of there, get out of the resistance and go live a happy life somewhere. That was the live free, don't join temptation, I think, that they were going for. So I don't know. That's, I mean, and honestly, that was the intention, I feel.
I felt like
it didn't hit
like
you.
A character needed to be there. I just felt like the combination, like he didn't quite live up to the devil on Finn's shoulders. I don't think that Finn was ever truthfully tempted. He was more disgusted by DJ throughout the whole sequence that he was in. They were playing off of each other. And I feel like it would have been a more interesting take on Finn's character to have been given a better, I don't know.
Like an actual bad.
Well, no. Like if DJ had added a line like, hey, you got this friend Rey you're always talking about. Why don't you bring her along? We could make a life together. Yeah. Honestly, that would have been enough to turn the character around for me. It just, there was nothing for Finn to actually feel tempted, in my opinion.
That's a good point. I can see that.
Yeah. What else? Oh, I just want to briefly talk about the opening crawl. So this is something I have known for a really long time because of listening to David W. Collins and these other like brilliant composers that actually love John Williams. They love John Williams as much as me, but they actually get like how he does his stuff. And he's like, every opening crawl is slightly different with the rebel fanfare and the main theme, right? The main theme. But he is wrong. He was wrong in the commentary. Do you want to know why? Because I know why.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Because the Phantom Menace fanfare, the, you know, main theme that we see with the opening crawl, was used for 2 and 3.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of like, that's kind of disappointing, actually.
Yeah. And like people smarter than me have analyzed this and they're like, it's in the same room. It's with the same instruments. It's the same music if you played them overlapping. So basically what they felt was the Phantom Menace main theme was the best recorded version of it. And anytime you hear in an audiobook or a video game or anything that has the opening main theme with the opening crawl music, that is the Phantom Menace recording of it.
Oh, that's weird. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it makes sense.
Because it is considered to be the best version of the opening crawl.
Of the opening, yeah. That's fascinating.
And I love...
So Ryan was wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, he just learned that this was a thing when he was a director. Yeah. Or, you know, whatever. I forgive him. I loved that he commented... Mm-hmm. That it had a warmer feeling to it. I love that. I love that he recognized that he's learned enough of John Williams now that he can recognize that it was recorded and mixed and edited to sound warmer. So they brought up some of the warmer instruments to mix it together. That's just like him learning as the process. To me, that just reflects how much care and attention and love he put into this.
Mm-hmm. And he's a fan.
Totally a fan. You bring up something now about the commentary. I've been talking a lot.
It's been so long since I've listened to it. I don't remember so much because I remember him just being shocked about the ability of the actors and the ability of the set designers and all of that hard work that he doesn't really take credit for. Like, it was his vision, but he constantly talks about how, like, all these people came together to do it. So... I don't know. He doesn't talk a lot about character motivation. He doesn't get into it, which makes sense, you know. And also, he recorded the commentary before the movie was released in theaters. So I don't think he was ready for the kind of backlash that, like, Luke was going to get and, you know, all of those characters, like Rose. Like, he's not... defending anything in the commentary, which is good. I'm like glad that he didn't have to think about that going into it. If he would have done it after it was released, then I think he would have talked a lot more about the character motivations, but he avoided it. So
yeah,
I don't know if that means anything, but he talks more about it in like the other behind the scenes stuff. He talks a little bit more about character motivations and like what's going on in their head when this happens or this happens.
Yeah. I felt like Rose, when I originally watched it, landed a little awkward for me. But now I know why. Cause
it was meant to be.
But what I mean is like, I see myself in Rey. Like, I see myself as a person that's searching for belonging sometimes, and I see myself in Leia as a leader within my own personal life, as a mother. I see myself as these other characters that are kind of past the Rose phase, but Rose is my daughter. She is a pre-adolescent geek girl, and in many ways, I feel like Rose... And I want to talk about this just briefly, if you don't mind.
Totally.
I read a really interesting tweet, which was, don't you hate it when you watch a movie and you're watching a female character that you know was written by a man that hated women?
Oy. Yeah.
And Rian Johnson loves women. He loves them. And I want to talk about all these women that he loves so much that he wrote beautiful, fulfilled full characters for. I am so impressed. Rose is a love letter to every Star Wars fangirl.
Yeah, absolutely.
he wrote a love letter to the Looking for Leia people, basically.
Yeah.
Like he loves Star Wars fangirls. And there is every stage of woman in this movie. I don't know if you saw that, but like Rose is young adolescent. Rey is adolescence moving into womanhood. Holdo is capable professional woman. Leia is mother, you know, older mother, right? And Maz is kick-ass grandmother. Like, no. And she's just like, I've seen it all. Like, nothing surprises me anymore, kids. Like... Like, it's every phase of womanhood in this movie. And I didn't realize that until he kind of started talking about the women in the movie and how capable they all are and You know, and I also want to call out Amanda Lawrence, who plays kind of a bit part. She's wonderful. She nails every single scene that she's in. And man, I feel like back to this was the Star Wars movie I always wanted. Yeah, I always needed to see capable women succeeding.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it when I saw Rose and Holdo becoming a part of this movie. Like when we saw, you know, stuff coming out right before the movie, I thought that was so cool because they killed off Han in the previous film. And in that film, in The Force Awakens, we had a lot of really great male characters. I mean, we had like kind of probably the same thing that you're saying that we have in Last Jedi for females. And the fact that they were putting in like two more women, and the fact that they were so different from each other and they were so different from anything that we've seen in a Star Wars movie before, it, to me, it just made sense for them to go in that direction. Like, it just does. Because if you want to do a new trilogy in this day and age, you're going to try to explore as many different types of characters you possibly can that relate to your viewership. So that to me, it just made logical sense. To me, it's not like a social justice warrior thing. It's not a political thing. It's not trying to send a message to men per se. It's just trying to relate to people. It's just trying to, you know, it's the auteur thing a little bit. Like you said, like Rian Johnson loves women. He wrote really awesome women.
Yeah.
And that's as simple as it is.
Well, actually, I think it's more, and this is something, again, I keep on calling back to our review walkthrough of The Last Jedi, because we did bring this up and it was the guys that brought this up. They said, yeah, all of the people in this movie looked like real people. Like they just walked off the street. They
yeah, that's like, so true.
They look like people. They look like they took a snapshot of like humanity and put it on screen. And it was like, yeah, I can see myself in any of those characters because I'm a normal person, you know, looks, personality, etc. I'm a normal person and I want to be able to see myself and not have a perfect ideal version to live up to, because exactly, this is supposed to be telling us what is important to us as people, right? And this is a reflection of humanity. And if it doesn't truthfully reflect humanity because everybody looks too perfect, everybody looks, mm-hmm, you know, airbrushed with makeup, then, mm-hmm, and they don't, yeah, and they don't look a little raw, they don't look a little strung out because they've been, you know, through it, then
yeah,
it's gonna land flat.
Totally. Yeah, that's what was so special about Rose. I mean, like you say, you relate a lot to like Rey in some ways and Leia in other ways. I relate to Rose and Rey because I mean obviously like I'm pretty young, but like Rose to me was so full of heart and awkward, and I think that's the best thing about it, right? To throw in like an awkward female character really, really rung true to a lot of Star Wars girls, because we feel like that a lot. her talking line is just, oh, it hits me right in the heart.
Yeah, and in a way her journey sort of reflects the, you know, odd feeling of being a Star Wars girl in that like she didn't feel like she could be a hero. She was like, I'm taking you into the brig. And Finn's like, no. And Finn opened the gate. He opened the door for her to be a hero by saying, no, you're smart. I'm smart. We're going to go talk to Poe. Like,
oh,
right.
Yeah. I just thought about something. So there was it in the commentary where whenever Finn was piloting the ship, he was basically going on a suicide mission. He was going to like try to kill himself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then that like really weird moment where like Rose kamikazes into him and you're like, okay, why did that just happen? I think in the commentary, is it right where Rian Johnson is like, we get to see all three of their arcs, Poe, Finn, and Rose come together at the same time. Like they reach their point because Poe says, pull back. Finn says, no, I'm going to do this. I'm sacrificing myself for the resistance. And then Rose becomes a hero in that moment.
Yeah.
You get and it's to like see all three of their arcs.
All of their arcs together. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like at the same time, which is beautiful. Like, how was he able to pull that off? But at the same time, it's like an execution. You go, did it work? And now I question, like, did it work? Did it not work? And I totally get the intention and I felt it, but I mean, could there have been a better way to do it? And I don't know, I wrestle with that part, but I thought it was really beautiful. Like, his summation of it made me appreciate it so much more.
What I find is that sometimes I need to watch a movie twice, just because to really get the solid impression of what I truthfully think about it. Mm-hmm. So when I first saw it, that scene didn't land, but I was kind of in a weird mood. It was late at night, you know, things like that. So when I view it again, I love the line. Star Wars has cheesy kisses all the time.
Yeah.
I'm good with it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like it's fine. I think it shows, and I appreciate the culmination of their stories. And I think that many Star Wars fans that liked The Last Jedi loved it after they watched it a second time. I loved it after the first time, but I was confused. And I've talked about that a lot. So I don't need to rehash. But I loved how, like, quite literally all of these characters, you got to see their full arc, and he calls it out and he's like, yeah, this is the arc. I do want to talk about Holdo and Poe a little tiny bit. And then Poe and Leia a little bit. But Holdo and Poe, they got a lot cut from their story. He calls that out. He says a lot of their lines, a lot of their bickering, a lot of their discussion was cut for time, was cut for just because it didn't need to be there.
Right.
This was one of the main complaints that I have heard, is that, look, Poe wouldn't, have gone out and done whatever he was going to do if he knew there was a plan. Well, he wasn't really willing to listen either way. And I think it actually makes his character seem worse if Holdo says to him, look, dude, I have a plan. You just need to sit tight. And he goes and does it anyways. I think that's the reason all of that stuff was cut. So it doesn't make him seem like, I don't know, an incompetent idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about this with the novelization as well. Like, the novel, I think it's just a tone type of thing. I think that in the movie, like you said, maybe a lot was cut that maybe landed better when you watch it in succession. But I never had a problem with it. I didn't walk out of the theater thinking, oh, she should have told him her plan. Like, no, he was demoted by Leia before that. Like, that would have been disrespectful to Leia's orders if she would have told him the plan. I mean, there's so many reasons for why she didn't tell him the plan. But that's a problem that a lot of people have, which is frustrating.
Well, in the novelization, he says in his head, look, Holdo, you should be paying attention that people are upset around you and you should tell them the plan. Yeah. But really what he's saying is, you should tell me the plan. I am upset. And
exactly. And
I am old enough to know that, no, sometimes you don't need to know the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can see it in the movie, and it's really clear in the book. He thought he was going to be promoted to be in charge of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you can see it in the movie. So he is acting from a place of entitlement. He thinks he is Leia's backup. He thinks he is the apprentice that is ready to take on the master's responsibility. And I think that Leia is actually really disappointed that he isn't ready, and that he proves that he isn't ready by the choices that he makes in the start of the movie. And that's where he's not plugged into the larger picture, and Holdo is right. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, everybody. Holdo's right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe she could have been more sensitive. That's certainly, if she was still, you know, in the resistance, somebody might have coached her, but she sacrificed herself to save the entire resistance. I think we can forgive her.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
It's mentioned in the commentary and then in the director in the Jedi a little bit about, like, the choices that he made with how Luke felt, and that it was an active choice rather than a passive choice. And I think that that's really important, and I'm not sure it landed with everybody, which is really interesting because Luke making an active choice to withdraw himself, and there's one, we're going to talk about it when we get to the deleted scenes. There's one scene that I think that could have flipped that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think I know which one you're talking about. Well, there's a couple, but.
But I think that choosing to do nothing is still a choice.
Yeah.
Right? And.
Oh, yeah.
And choosing to do nothing when you know your sister might die, your best friend has died, is still a choice.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's in the force, or the balance of the force featurette, yeah, as well.
Like, he mentions it all over the place, because I think, mm-hmm, I think that Luke, from a character decision perspective, although probably twisted by his own failure, is really important. It's, he didn't know what else to do, and he didn't seek the answers in the force. He cut himself off from the force, which is never a good idea.
Right.
He loves Daisy and Adam. He gushes over
them.
Oh,
yeah.
He gushes. And he does. I want to say, this will go for the entire bonus features. Do we get to see Adam Driver talk about his character?
One time.
Yeah, I know. One time, hey? And I think it was in, was it in the Balance of the Force?
Those two, they blend together for me. I feel like it was in The Director and the Jedi, but it could have been in the Balance of the Force.
Yeah. But okay, so... so quite literally one time. And
it's one time.
And Rian Johnson calls out in the director's commentary, and this is why I always think of you whenever I think of mystery boxes. And he's like, well, you know, we had to get rid of that mask because we have to be able to see inside his head with his micro expressions, as you call them, yes. Ty. I want to talk about Adam Driver and what I felt during these bonus features, because we get a lot of Daisy, we get a lot of Mark, we get a lot of the other people, and we get, yeah, a lot of them talking about how they're thinking and feeling and stuff like that. And it's just like the Last Jedi novelization, where the absence of the internal workings of Kylo Ren are poignant. It is shocking. Yeah. It's like when you look at a picture, you look at a piece of art, and when you're, you know, maybe the main figure is holding out their hand and something is missing from their hand, but it's shaped like they should be holding something. The absence of something is just as strong as the presence.
Yeah.
So
that's what I think.
The fact that they are deliberate, like this is deliberate, that they are, yeah, not showing us his internal thought structure, mm-hmm, how Adam is feeling about his character. It's like, In The Director and the Jedi, you see him like on set doing his stuff, yeah, but you don't even, you see nothing other than that.
Yeah.
Like it's so weird. It is like,
and he's like, such a big part of the movie.
Yes. Yes. And like every other time in a Star Wars movie, George Lucas especially, he recorded everything. He, yeah, recorded everything, commentary, directors, like commentary, like there was a DVD box set that, or sorry, a VHS box set that came out with like these massive documentaries. It's specifically, yeah, being cut from the documentaries.
Yeah, it is. It has to be, because he was like, Adam Driver was in that chair talking to them on the screen, and like, there's no way he just said that one thing.
No. This is purposeful.
It's totally purposeful.
I like the fact that he's like a very method actor, where he gets very serious and he's in character like the whole time. That's got to be very intense, yeah, to be around. But to me, that means, okay, everybody at Lucasfilm has made a deliberate decision that we are detectives, Ty. If we are detectives, Lucasfilm has specifically decided that the mystery in the sequel trilogy is,
yeah,
the decision yet to be made by Kylo Ren.
Yeah. And in fact, the only thing that Adam does say in all of the bonus features is, I don't think he ever quite came to terms with the light, with the fight inside of him between the light and the dark. Like, that is one of the only things that he says. And keeping it so lost in the, you know, ambiguity of it is like both frustrating and like super exciting for what we get to see in 9. I mean, he's not on a villain's journey, he's on a redemption arc. That's just how it is. That's fact at this point.
I'm gonna tell you the two times that during the bonus features they mess up though.
Ooh.
You want to hear them? Okay.
Yeah.
So, during The Director and the Jedi, there is a dude, I don't know who he is, a man who is showing the proppy table of all of the weapons.
Oh,
and he's like,
yeah.
These are our hero's weapons. Here's Kylo Ren's lightsaber.
Yeah.
Cool. And during the throne room fight, back to back, Rian Johnson said, and our heroes are ready for action.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also says, there's that really great line that I will always repeat, which is, here we have two halves of our protagonist.
Yeah.
There are two halves of the same protagonist. And it's like such a beautiful way to look at it. Like, they are the balance. Mm. That's the whole point of The Last Jedi, is about balance. So,
well, not just that, but also The Force Awakens is showing how off balance the universe has become very quickly.
Yeah.
And that... Yeah. Without some correction, and everyone's guessing at what that correction is, the Jedi. Like, Lor San Tech is like, without the Jedi, there can be no balance. It's like, you know, everybody's kind of guessing at what that means. And I'm getting closer to having speculation based on my non-movie reading. So that, I feel really good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I really loved what Rian said about the throne room. And he talked about talking to Adam. So it wasn't Adam talking. It was talking about talking to Adam and about really determining how Kylo would feel entering the throne room.
Oh, yeah.
I loved this part. It's so, if you just skip forward in the commentary until he's talking about the throne room, you'll hear all about his thoughts. So I highly recommend it. He says, I talked with Adam about Kylo and how he felt and when he felt what he felt, because it was important to know what he felt when he felt, because he knew that Snoke could feel his intentions.
Yeah.
And you can see that on Adam's face. You can see that in his movements, and you can see that in how it plays out in the scene, and it's timed perfectly. They got the editing right. They got that idea. And in Rian's opinion, Kylo was going to kill Snoke when he walked in the room.
Yep. Yep. That's what he said in the Collider interview.
And in the commentary, he said that.
I think, yeah, he does. Doesn't he kind of allude to it more so? I think
he said, in my opinion, Kylo was ready to kill Snoke when he walked in the room.
Does he really? Yeah. I totally missed that. I guess because he said before the DVD came out that he said that in a Collider interview a few months ago that he knew that, yeah, he knew he was going to kill Snoke when he came into the throne room. He just had to figure out how.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of interesting ideas, and I know about this effect, which he mentions. It's called the Rashomon effect.
Yes.
And it's based on a movie, Rashomon, which is a Kurosawa movie, which was one of the things that they watched in Space Bear Camp.
So cool.
But the Rashomon effect is an actual thing where you can't face your own truth of a past event. So this is to do with the flashback scenes that Kylo and Luke have, like the three flashbacks. Yeah. And Luke edits his own flashback because of his shame. Rian feels like Kylo's interpretation of it is from his perspective and the truth from his perspective, which I find to be interesting because he is telling his enemy the most hurtful thing that he has ever experienced. He's telling Rey, his quote unquote enemy, the thing that turned him to the dark side officially.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Literally how you start a redemption.
like you're calling it out and you're like, you know, he is asking for compassion
and understanding
yeah. And like, people don't do that are unredeemable monsters.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then Luke tells more of the truth. And he does see that Ben feels betrayed and he does feel his failure. And that's why he edited his further version. I think that Luke's version is as close to the truth as possible. But that effect, and I think that there is a lesson to be learned for all of us, is like, how can we be truthful to ourselves in how we remember our own past? And I feel like that's just a little gift to the audience. Like, remember, mm-hmm. it's really important to own up to your own failures. And I mean, Yoda says that to Luke. It's the best teacher. It's important to know how to move past those and then to teach others how to move past those.
Yeah, totally. Oh,
man, this movie. What else? Force Connects. You want to talk about Force Connects?
Yeah. What does he say in the commentary about Force Connects?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much what we've talked about before, like that they were meant to be intimate, the simplest visual tricks work the best because it brings them back to their base. We as a movie watching audience are used to seeing things a certain way. Cut to person one, Ty. Cut to person two, Marie Claire. Cut to person one, Ty. It's a conversation. We're in the same room.
Yeah.
Even if I were to post a video of us and it would cut back and forth, if we had the same background or even not the same background, people would be like, oh, yes, they are having a conversation, the two of them. Yeah. And it is a very simple storytelling technique for movies that he was like, you know what? Sometimes the simplest techniques are the best ones because simple doesn't mean cheap. It doesn't mean easy, but it does mean it can tell what they need to tell without distracting the viewer from the point. And the point is these people are able to connect and are able to have a conversation just like Ty and I talking over Google Hangouts without needing or having the ability to kill each other, and they can't control it, which it sets up this idea that the Force is connecting them for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that betrayal that Kylo feels when he finds out that Snoke is the one that initiated the bridge.
Yeah. All of that is just so, it's so much heavier, I think, without any sort of weird, like, I think Ryan says trippy.
Yeah.
He could have done something really trippy with it. But he decided not to. Like some kind of like sparkly visuals or like galactic like visuals or something. And he didn't. He just decided to go simple. And like you said, it's not cheap because they had to fly Adam Driver out just to do it on the side, which I wish we would have seen. Well, okay, when Daisy was with Adam Driver doing the scenes from his room, she was in costume. Mm. So I wonder if when he was in Ireland, if he was in costume outside in the
pouring. Well, in the very least, you got him in costume in the hut, right? Because
so
we
saw that.
He probably was, but they probably put an umbrella over him so he didn't ruin the costume.
Yeah, probably. I love it. There was a part, we can talk about that when we get to.
Yeah, I think we're almost Director and Jedi. Done the commentary.
Yeah.
Ooh, I love this. I think he says that the connection between Kylo and Rey is a primal connection. I don't know. I just love that.
Does he really? That's, wow. Primal. What a word.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he calls out a few awesome people all the way along. Oh, and he calls out that during the flashback scenes of Ben in some of the script writing, he thought about what Ben's training at Jedi summer camp would look like. And I was like, damn, I want to see Ben Solo at Jedi camp.
Yeah, me too. I'm pretty sure we'll get like, whether in like a cartoon or a comic, I would love a comic. I think that would be really nice. Mm-hmm. It would be really like subtle and very emotional if we got that. But we'll definitely get the Jedi temple that Luke built in some
it'll,
story.
It'll be after 9.
Yeah, it'll be after 9 for sure.
And then they'll start filling in the gaps and stuff like that, depending on where the movies and the streaming shows and the other cartoons end up going.
Yeah, definitely.
One last thing, because I cannot giggle enough at how Ryan describes it. In the Force Connection scene, where they're in the hut and they're touching fingers, and they actually touch fingers, and they used a practical effect to blow up the hut, right? So Luke comes in and it's a practical effect, and Ryan's like, and here's where here's where Adam Driver scampers out of the way, and then we come back in and he's gone, and I'm like, oh my god, I want to see Adam Driver scamper.
We get to see it. Well, sort of. We get to see in The Director and the Jedi, it's in the very bottom left corner of the frame, and they pull all the rocks away when Luke is like, stop, and you see the back of Adam Driver's head move out.
No, but you can't see his feet. I want to see a scamper.
You want to see him scamper? I feel like it was very, like, I feel like it was very, like, knowing Adam Driver and, like, his method acting and stuff, he was probably,
stalking.
Like... yeah. Like,
boot clomping out of the way. No, I mean, like, oh my God. And you hear about these, like, really interesting things, like, the Canto Bite, where the camera pans through all the gambling tables.
Yeah.
And Ryan's like, and the actors needed to do their thing and then duck out of the way. It's like that's, and he feels almost regretful by ruining the magic. But the thing is, Ryan, I know you're listening to my podcast. No, you're not, but that's okay. Ooh. But if you ever do, Ryan, the thing that you should not worry about, and my expectation of you in the future, is that you have young, inspiring filmmakers that are inspired and affected emotionally by your work. And they want to know, how did you do that? What do I need to look up to figure out how to do that, Ryan? Mm-hmm. Ruin the magic. That is part of the director's commentary, is to teach, is to teach and to show and to really talk about how much goes into one of these things, and that by bashing you on the internet, they're quite literally bashing artists like thousands deep.
Yeah.
Like, and that is unfair. Oh. And you have to take all of that brunt. But we love you for it, because we loved this movie, and thank you for making it. Love, Ty and Marie Claire.
Love us. Oh yeah, I put The Director and the Jedi as a documentary. I put that up there with, like, the I mean, it's nowhere on the scale as, like, Lord of the Rings. I mean, you can't really do better than, you know, New Zealand as your backdrop for, like, behind the scenes. How did you do this? How did you do that? How did you get your characters on top of this mountain?
How did you shrink your characters? How did you grow your characters?
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I feel like I've never been so interested with how they did it, how they pulled these things off, since I was with Lord of the Rings. I mean, that's saying a lot. Like, I feel like the behind the scenes for this movie, there's so much depth and there's so many layers because of how many people worked on it. I think they even said that if you took, like, one of the production designers or something said that if you took Rogue One and The Force Awakens and put them together, The Last Jedi is still a bigger
production
movie in terms of production scale. I mean, that's like, oh my gosh, that's the coolest thing in the world.
Yes, I totally agree. Since that was such a good setup, Ty, let's move on to The Director and the Jedi.
Yeah. The Director and the Jedi.
All right.
So good.
Okay. So it really sets it up well by basically saying Mark Hamill hated everything that you had ever thought of, hates you in a fundamental level, but will do the work for you no matter what.
Yes.
Whoa. Yes. Mark, I love you. I love you for putting so much of yourself into this, that you were against what they had done to the character, because I can see it. I can see, as an older gentleman like you are, that you want to look back on your life and feel like the journey was worth it. You know, you want to find meaning, and you want to be able to see that these moments mattered to people. But let me tell you, Mark Hamill, because I'm sure you're listening to this, Mark Hamill, this was worth it. This taught everyone that Luke still had a journey to make, that even if you have a crisis when you are older, that you can get past it. You had another hero's journey in you. Thank you for sharing it with us.
That is lovely.
Oh, thank you.
That is so lovely. The line, "We are what they grow beyond," It sums up a lot of, I think, what the issues were that, you know, Mark had with it. Like, his story is done with Star Wars, and Star Wars is ready to grow beyond what he brought to the story. So it's lovely. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I loved how Ryan and Carrie seemed to have such a special relationship. Like, she contributed to her own storytelling, but he also seemed to be so respectful of everyone. Like, he adjusted scenes to have Anthony Daniels' ideas, Mark Hamill's ideas for Luke. Like, you know, Daisy, I'm sure they were collaborating really well with how she was feeling emotionally. I'm sure that Adam and him workshopped a lot of how to get Kylo's micro expressions on his face. Like, this eye, it's this eye twitch. Like, there's this one moment after Snoke zaps him with lightning after he's taken off his helmet. He's standing in the elevator and he has this, like, just like little tiny eye twitch. And
yes.
And then he smashes his helmet. And I'm not an actor, but I have directed on the stage. And to get that out of an actor is what you dream of. You dream of this like subtlety, and you dream of this. They're so in the moment that they cannot see out of their own eyes without that lens of that moment. And that is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, he's phenomenal. I was going to talk about Carrie Fisher. Mm. I loved her joking around was just, it was everything that we would have ever wanted from having Carrie Fisher in kind of a candid way behind the scenes, saying that he was an asshole and then being like, no, he's great. But then also saying that he had a dominating vision.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that, especially because apparently they butted heads a little bit, but her handling of it was so different from Mark's.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important to me, looking at like Mark's kind of journey in accepting this part of Luke as part of, like, you know, who he thinks Luke is supposed to be. And then seeing like Carrie butt heads with Ryan, but in more of a fun way. Like, he says, you know, the comma joke, the double comma joke. I feel like there's a little bit more there than what we got. So you remember when Johnson's like, you know, this is where you say Finn, like, but you're like Finn. And Carrie Fisher is like, let me practice it a few times. Finn? Finn. And she says it like a couple of times. And Johnson's like, I'm trying to direct you, stop. And like Oscar Isaac is like, well, maybe you should try it with a double comma. And then she says like, Finn. And then Johnson replies, I thought it was just a funny joke, but then Ryan replies, oh yes, the double comma.
Whoa, yeah, that could be something, hey?
I feel like it's maybe like an inside joke, like maybe he had a couple of double commas as like a typo in the script. That's just my headcanon, but I thought it was so cute when I heard him the second time of watching it. Actually, the third time. I've seen it three times.
Whoa.
The third time I watched it, I caught that and I thought it was so cute. I was like, they must have had so much fun. And to see like the interactions between Carrie and Ryan was really special. And to see his, like, Ryan's comments about Carrie and, like, her passing and how that affected him and how that affected the film and how it didn't affect the film is really interesting.
Yeah. They also talked about this idea that we, Liam, James, and I called it out when we were watching the movie and then when we did our deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea that the grotesque can turn into beauty. And it's everywhere in the movie. And I'm going to play the Ben Redemption card and say this is a theme for the sequel trilogy. The grotesque, the monstrous, transforming into beauty. Because it is the environment. It is Kylo. It is it is all around them. Like that throne room scene after the fight is finished. And they're literally describing it as like this grotesque scene that ends up being incredibly beautiful in the background with the falling pieces, sparks that ILM added in. Beautiful.
Yeah, well, and then the sea cow.
Oh, sea cow. Oh, man, that was a heavy sea cow.
God, that was so cool. I thought it was really interesting how they kind of talked about it so much in the behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, that was really important to Ryan, which is great because I find it an incredibly important part of the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, and like you said, it's the grotesque. And they even said it in the documentary. They said it was like something that's, I think they might have actually used the word grotesque, but combined with, you know, the beauty of it. And then like the humor combined with like, I could dive very deep into that, obviously.
we'll get into that at a future episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. But let's just say I did a video on it.
Yes, like, you did.
But yeah, like that was really cool to me to see that they put so much weight to it, and they didn't just do it in CGI. Like they could have, they actually dropped part of their budget on something else so they could put it to the helicopter to get the darn thing to Ireland. That was so cool to me.
Are we done with the director and the Jedi? Or is there anything else you want to bring up?
Oh, just the pure existence of it. Mm. So this is really interesting to me because they didn't do this for The Force Awakens.
Because JJ isn't that type of director, whereas George was.
No.
George recorded everything. He had a camera crew behind the scenes for like everything.
Which is funny because I feel like, again, this goes to show you that it's all about the director and their vision and what they're bringing to the table. Disney is not like hovering over them, like saying, you have to do this. If they were, then they would have done this with JJ, you know. This was all Ryan. Ryan wanted to do this.
He has his own camera. He has a film camera and he takes his own pictures.
Yeah.
He is always a storyteller. He is always telling stories in the visual medium, and he likes to capture candid moments.
Yeah, and I can't wait for that coffee table book, apparently, that will come out. That's going to be great. I've heard that he's going to publish more of those in a book format at some point. So
that's wonderful.
So there's the shirtless scene.
Oh, yeah.
So this is something I've seen online from people that don't like the movie in general. But there's people that do like the movie. They just don't like this scene. They don't like that there was the scene where he had his shirt off and it was, according to them, supposed to be funny.
No, then, not funny. No.
Right. And then, but because Rey was crying and then she like says, can you put a cowl on? Which is a funny line. Like it's a funny moment, but the entire scene is not funny. But the way, like, obviously it was shot to me as a woman, because I feel like this scene was really, honestly, for women. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of like a romance novel, like a cheesy one, where you're trying to get your characters to get a little bit more close to each other. You're trying to put in like a weird dramatic moment, but you're also trying to get them to like warm up to each other in like this very human way.
Yeah.
And if I can just add this, because I have a guilty pleasure book that I read. I don't know if you've heard of it. A Court of Thorns and Roses.
No.
Okay. It's great. But it is very much like guilty pleasure, romance, fantasy, new twist on Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, cool.
Which is interesting. And one of the things that happens is one of the characters, or the main female character, is crying. And then one of the romantic interests, like licks the tears off of her face.
Whoa.
In like a very weird thing, and it makes her kind of like, she wants to laugh but she can't laugh because it's like a serious moment, and like he's trying to break down her walls. And it's so funny because I can see those parallels with what's happening in the shirtless scene, because Rey is crying, and not that he's trying to make her feel better, but it has the same dramatic effect,
right,
to me, the same romantic dramatic effect that is tonally different for both of our characters. And that's exactly what happens in romance novels.
I want to speak to what my guys said, like Liam and James. Back to the Last Jedi review, where I watched it with, you know, two guys. One is in the 501st, one does photography and is an expert sword fighter, and he actually talks about the sword fighting in The Last Jedi in that review. So I do recommend you check it out. Both the guys loved this scene. They felt like,
really?
Yeah, they felt like if there was ever a way to show somebody that they needed help, showing their own vulnerability without saying that they're vulnerable would be the only way that they could do it.
Because I remember you saying that they loved the fact that Kylo was shirtless.
Yeah, and not in a way that's like sexual. It is it is a way to say, and they actually talk about Kylo's motivation from a male perspective really well. And I highly recommend that you check it out if you haven't already. It's really good that they get it. Like, it landed with them. So, I don't know. Cool. Maybe I've got some sensitive guys with me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's what it takes. It takes that little bit of sensitivity.
Like, we talked a little bit about how originally when some of the rumors about Adam going to Ireland and having these scenes that people felt like... I don't know, mostly male fans or talking heads talked about how that means that Kylo Ren is angry and is going to, you know, go after Rey and try and hurt her. And I actually bring this up with them and they're like, hell no. If I got beaten down as bad as I got beaten down, like Kylo Ren, I would be off licking my wounds. And I'm like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. That's so funny. No, I wasn't in tune with the speculations as much as some people were before Last Jedi, but I mean, yeah, no, it's so cool. It is so funny, though, that the fan fiction world are the ones that most accurately theorized what was going to happen with the Force bonds and...
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I also talk about in a previous episode. So check that one out, too. I think that's kind of everything with the director and the Jedi, other than it's one of the better sort of documentaries of a film, again, to what you said. And I want to also say Lucas has no qualms about firing a director in the middle of shooting a film. They have no qualms about firing a director before they even start. They have no qualms if their vision doesn't align with the vision of the director, they will just fire them. That has been proven multiple times.
Yeah.
Please, please, talking heads of the fandom, stop saying that Lucas and the directors are not on the same page. Stop it. It's not true, because Lucas is in charge. It's all of their money. Lucas is in charge. Disney steps out of the way as long as Lucas is telling their stories and that they're happy with what's happening. Because Lucas will just fire you if they're not. So stop it. They would have fired Ryan if they didn't want him to make this movie.
Yeah, totally. And it speaks even more, the fact that Lucasfilm let him do this documentary. It means that they really trusted him, because if they would have, you know, they started out filming this pretty early on into the process, they probably wouldn't have done that if they had any.
There's no documentary for Rogue One.
Well, there's no documentary for, I mean, there's, well, do you think there would have been for Rogue One? Like, do you think we'll get one for Han Solo? Like,
No, I don't think we're going to get one for Han Solo.
Because that had issues too.
They had to fire the directors. They brought in for Rogue One, and this has come out with the reshoots. There was a lot of problems. There's significant portions of the movie that had to be reshot, changed from a narrative perspective because it was too dark. I think they landed in the right Star Wars range in the end, but Gareth had to have somebody come in to help him with reshoots and with editing.
Yeah.
When they got in the editing room the first go around, they didn't have a movie. Ryan had a 4-hour movie. There was too much, so he had to just pare it down. And he was, what I found really interesting with his commentary on the process was that he would finish the dailies and then go back to his editing room that was mobile on site and edit. And find those moments so he didn't lose them, because there was so much to do.
Yeah, that's incredibly important. Like, I mean, you can tell as soon as they hit that tone in the director and the Jedi, as soon as he starts talking about it, you go, oh, that's how this film, that's how they made it. That's how they made it work, you know, at least for the people who think it worked. Like, if he hadn't have done that, then he wouldn't have had he wouldn't get the film that he has now. And I have to say, they took that line out, that what they show us there. They say, Luke says, you're going to let yourself fall to the darkness for a pair of pretty eyes.
Yeah. Stop.
They took it out.
Stop shaming Rey. I'm so happy they did.
I am too. It was like totally wrong. It didn't make any sense.
There's so much to talk about. I want to talk about Yoda and Luke and Mark and Frank Oz.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot.
It was the right decision to have Frank Oz have the puppet, recast the puppet. Thank God the Lucas archivists exist and they literally keep everything. Like,
yeah,
these librarians and archivists know everything. You as the fandom cannot know more than they know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people thought that Yoda looked nothing like the original puppet. People were literally complaining about the puppet. Like, they're like, they should have just made him CGI again. Are you kidding me? They got the same woman who painted Yoda's original eyes to paint his eyes again. They got the same woman to do it. That's crazy.
I think that the blue fuzzy outline that they added to make him a ghost, but more corporeal than the original effect, made people feel like he didn't look the same, but he was as close, like they show, he was as close to a real replica as you could possibly get. Let's face it, guys, you will never be 8 years old again watching the Star Wars movie. You will never be a child watching a Star Wars movie. Your vision has changed. You've probably got glasses now. Your vision has changed and you have to understand.
Yeah.
And try to pull yourself into that wonder of being a kid again. And you would have seen that was Yoda.
Yeah, totally.
So with kind of talking about the director and the Jedi, let's move on to quickly the balance and... It was like a mini documentary in a way. And it was like how Ryan thinks about the Force. And this is like me like, all right, kids, let's go to school.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Force. This is the Force. Mm. And the Force is.
Or what it's not.
It's not superpowers. As much as when we were children, we're like, it'd be so cool to have the Force and be able to, you know, pull things across the room. It's deeper than that. Yes, you can do those things, but it's deeper than that. And this is reflected in every single Lucas property. There is no confusion about what the Force represents. It is from the beginning of the saga. As soon as the Empire Strikes Back happened, and George Lucas really had to figure out, okay, what does the Force actually mean? Him and Lawrence Kasdan wrote what the Force is back then, and it has never changed. Yeah. People who weren't involved in the movies or the cartoon, the Clone Wars or Rebels, in previous expanded canon, had their own interpretation of the superpowers, and that is wrong. That is why the canon no longer exists.
Yeah.
Canon now, since the reset, has been on the same Force message. It's different perspectives of how to talk about it. But I've read a lot of the Star Wars canon that is out of the shows and out of the visual medium. I've read the comics. I've read the books. And this is the same message. It's one story.
Mm-hmm.
Please watch it. It's cool. it's very Eastern philosophy. And actually, because of that, I have reached out to an excellent friend of mine. I want to talk about religion in Star Wars. So I'm going to be scheduling that shortly so that let's talk about it. It is in some ways very Buddhist and in some ways very Confucianist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Well, there's a lot of Western ideas wrapped into it that makes it so palatable. Like, it's so easy to digest because you have the hero's journey, you have like all of that Eastern philosophy of balance in there. You still have a tale of light and dark fighting each other. It's like a strange combination of so many things. And that's why people argue about it so much, honestly.
Lucas has been talking about this. Many of the people who are more public facing in the last few months have been talking about this, which is, the force and the power that you plug into is not something that you can level up.
Mm-hmm.
As much as the video games have caused that interpretation of it because of the gamification of Star Wars, it is not something that you can level up. Actually, in the Clone Wars and in Rebels, we see several examples of very powerful Force babies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have any things getting them in, getting in the way. It's very like you're going to a yoga class. Like, if you can clear your mind enough, you have access to all of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just wish more people would listen to what the creators were really saying.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all.
Well, and also the prequels didn't do much to help kind of like what the idea of the Force was, because it almost went too far in showing the Force as a superpower. Like,
no.
Here's one thing. I don't think it has anything to do. I don't think fundamentally it was bad. I don't think in intention it was bad. I think just aesthetically it makes some kids think that it kind of leads to the whole gamification thing, like you said. When you see just visually, this is not like the message. The message is great. The message is still the same. But visually, the Force is used to like throw droids across the room, like, you know, the Roger droids, whatever they are. You know, they like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon just like toss them around like they're just like, you know, nothing. And you don't see the feeling that it takes to use the Force. And there's a reason for that. I mean, it's because the Jedi are being mindful of the living Force. And they're like, that's the whole thing that Qui-Gon says to Obi-Wan.
No. So Qui-Gon is the only one
mm-hmm.
that gets it.
Yes. And what's the first thing he says to Obi-Wan in episode one?
Be mindful of the living
Force. Yes. Which is about like, just like, he's the only one who gets it. Because he's not
being in the moment.
Being in the moment,
but
exactly.
He is also a product of the institution that raised him as a child.
Yes.
He is also, it's like you guys in the U.S. judging science by the imperial system. When everybody else in the world uses metric because it is better for standardization and interpretation of scientific outcomes.
Yeah.
The Jedi have implemented this measuring system that seems to make sense to them because of history, midichlorians.
Uh-huh.
However, it is not the best method of understanding and interpreting what they're actually experiencing.
Right.
It's convoluted. It's not the right way.
Right.
And that is the reflection of what it is. Midichlorians just exist.
Mm-hmm.
They just do, right? I mean, I really like the interpretation that they're like Wi-Fi boosters. They're Wi-Fi boosters that like they just happen to hang out in Force users because they enhance it and they make them more accessible to the signal. And actually in the novelization of The Last Jedi, Leia talks about how she can feel the microorganisms within her that are calling to the Force and enhancing it. I thought that was a really subtle, like, we got you. Why I'm saying all this is because, like, what's the so what, Marie Claire? The so what is there are other ways to talk about the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? And they have explored multiple ways to talk about the Force within the larger canon, and right now they're just choosing to not use midichlorians because it was like using the imperial system.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a really good point. And that's what I was trying to say about like the prequels is I feel like
what was wrong with the Jedi.
Yes,
that is truthfully what the prequels are about, which is yes, the Jedi had all of these cool powers because they taught them, and they taught how people could plug into the Force in those specific ways.
Yes.
But they missed the point.
But so many people, and I've seen so many people online, and before I realized that getting into arguments was useless, I was engaging in a lot of, you know, more philosophical arguments about why the Jedi are wrong. And so many people out there do not see that. Like, even after watching the prequels, they don't get that. That's not the message they received, when that is the message of the prequels. The Jedi were wrong. Like, the council was wrong. Like, Yoda was wrong. And they don't want to...
Yeah, and he admits he is wrong in The Last Jedi.
But they think that that retconned the everything that came before it. They think that The Last Jedi changed something, but it didn't. It was just explicitly saying what all the movies were trying to say before.
Yeah, it's because people weren't getting it before.
That's... And that must suck to be there.
And you know what? You know what? The Clone Wars does a really good job. I highly recommend watching through the Clone Wars. Yeah. If you have not, the Clone Wars show, although the Jedi tried. They tried. They tried to have the moral high ground. Yeah. I'm funny. High ground. They tried to have the moral high ground. They failed. Anakin Skywalker, like they failed
Ahsoka,
all children that they brought within their purview because they disconnected them from the true meaning of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And that's the whole point of this, which is, as you turn from a child into an adult, you need to find who you truly are and not what society puts upon you.
Yeah, definitely.
Whew. Sorry, that was enough of that.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Andy Serkis, One Night Only, so good. Just go watch it. It's really great. Andy Serkis is great in anything he does. I hope he wins an Oscar eventually for his visual effects acting, because they basically take and interpret exactly what he does and throw it on screen. I hope he wins an Oscar for visual effects acting at one point.
Dude, same. It was really cool for Ryan to put that on the DVD. I thought that was really special.
Yeah, it was really great. And to show, like, this is what goes into these things. Just crazy. Yeah. Let's talk about scene breakdown. And then we'll talk about deleted scenes and then we'll wrap this all up.
Cool.
Yeah, scene breakdown. So first was the ship battles, the space battles, mm-hmm. pretty generally speaking. What did you think of it?
Like, are you talking about like the behind the scenes, like when they, the featurette
What goes into space battles?
Oh, that was really cool. I can't remember this one particularly because I know like there was a couple of things that were cut with Paige.
Yeah.
But maybe you can jog my memory about like what they talked about.
Oh, sure. So he really broke out like how to do storytelling using a battle.
Oh, yeah.
And what I loved about it was he's like, if you just show ships attacking and you don't show inside of the cockpit, it's not going to mean anything.
And he wanted to cut to the faces in the cockpit as much as possible.
And it shows the acting, like Oscar Isaac really playing the, I think Ryan jokes, it's like X-Wings Tokyo Drift, like, because he's he's like leans with the G-forces, and that gave the ILM team more to do with the, like, with the production of the X-Wing and like how to shake it and how to manipulate it and how to make it feel real. And I felt like those scenes were great. Adam Driver and just acting the crap out of that scene where he's communicating with his mother. I don't know if Carrie was in the room when they actually had that, like maybe off to the side and like them looking at each other or something like that, but they acted and it felt like they were actually looking at each other.
Can I just say, and I don't know if we've talked about this before, but in that scene where Adam is talking, or Adam is feeling where Kylo Ren is feeling Leia, they do the fade in, fade out, the same one that they did for Luke and Leia whenever in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah. They mentioned that it's a lot like the Darth Vader communicating with Luke scene at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, maybe it's like that too. But I thought it was like, you know, when Luke is hanging on, you know, like onto the thing, and then Leia feels him. That is the same.
I wish they had force talked to each other.
Oh yeah.
That was like, cause Luke and Leia kind of talked to each other a little bit in that scene. Vader and Luke, he's like father. And he's like, Luke, you know, and like there's some words. I wish there had been like words, not just facial expressions, yeah. But
what did you say earlier? Like, it's not, it's what they don't have
that's I know, so meaningful. I know. I know. Like, there's this massive absence of all of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
We'll get inside. We'll get the, like, what is it? We'll get the inside of his head book one day.
Just from his perspective. Right? The entire, everything that happened in the sequels, but from Kylo Ren's perspective.
Exactly. Like, we just need to know how Kylo was feeling this whole time. You will sell a lot of copies of that book.
I totally Lucas. Agree.
I'm just telling you, smart business decisions.
Dude, so many people want that, though. So many people want
that. No, I know. I highly recommend Jason Fry. Mm-hmm. He was really good. Also, Ken Leo, the yes. author of The Legends of Luke Skywalker. Claudia Gray has good internal work of Leia. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know. I would buy that. I would buy multiple copies because I would want the audio one. And I would want the physical one. So same. Think about it, guys. I liked the bombers. I liked all of the visual cues to indicate other movies. And this is going to play into something you and I are going to talk about in a future episode, which is like when they do these things where they call to certain previous movies or they're calling to certain things that are like visually already in our cultural subconscious, mm-hmm. it is on purpose.
Yeah.
And it means something. And we're going to talk about that at some future mm-hmm. point.
Totally.
It goes a lot into Leia's character. And I don't know that they did enough of this through all of the bonus features. Because I wanted to have a special just on Carrie mm-hmm. in this. But maybe it's something that will come out later. I know she had The Princess Diarist, which was very much her own thoughts. Her autobiography, etc. But Leia is defined by loss and that she is at her breaking point in this movie. And I feel like that is such a powerful thing to have shown on screen. And throughout these little moments where we get to see her basically on the edge of breaking, Carrie acted this out. Mm-hmm. You feel it. So great stuff.
Yeah. She did.
Next one. You good with that?
Yeah.
Snoke and Mirrors. All I can say is this gave me shivers. I felt creeped out.
Which one is this?
So.
Oh, Snoke and Mirrors.
The one about Snoke and Mirrors.
Yeah. This one was crazy. Is this the one where we get to see like there was like a couple things were cut, like where like Snoke like touches Kylo's face or something?
Yeah, that was in the book.
Yeah, it was in the book.
He wipes a tear or something from his face, which, again, Snoke is creepy.
Yeah, Snoke is super creepy. I liked that Rian Johnson was really, really focused on getting him to look as realistic as possible. Like, they kept coming back with, you know, this look to him that was too... It wasn't that he thought it was fake looking. It was just like he wanted him to look human. Like he wanted him to look like someone we could recognize.
And also he wanted him to look powerful even though he
The shoulder thing.
Yeah, so they widened the mm-hmm. shoulders and they widened his head and they gave him a more powerful chin. So he looked like an abuser.
Yes, I thought that was...
He looked like somebody who tortured a little kid for his whole
yeah,
life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good job, Brian.
Good job, for sure.
Thanks for giving us nightmares.
Yeah.
That's all I want to talk about Snoke. Crait.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crait was cool.
Yeah. Rian. Okay. I only have two things to say about this. You might have more, but I only have two things to say about this. I'm going to drop my pen. First, you say, the topsoil is white with the ruby red underneath. Okay, cool. I get it. It's a body. It's the Skywalkers. Sure, I get mm-hmm. it. You're not you're smacking us over the head with this. As the fight begins to happen, Krait literally bleeds, throwing red up in the air. During the Luke fight, the ground is red throughout all the way until midway point through the fight, when all of the like salt has flaked down, and by the end of the fight, the ground is white. The fight enabled the healing process for the Skywalker legacy.
Yes. Okay, so this is twofold. There's a lot, like, this is another one of those things where there's a lot of layers. There's a lot of meanings for different characters. And another part of, like, the fact that there's red and then there's salt is rubbing salt in the wound.
Yeah.
And it's like you rub salt in the wound and then you can begin the healing process.
Yeah. Confrontation with Luke needed to happen. Yeah. Luke needed to apologize. Kylo wasn't ready to hear it, but the words needed to be said. Luke's mistake in that was that Kylo wasn't ready to hear it, and you can't necessarily make somebody ready to hear your apology and to make reparations, but he tried his best. I really hope Mark Hamill comes back in 9.
Me too.
And is like having genuine conversations with Kylo in his darkest hours.
Well, he says, I'll always be with you. Strike me down in anger and I'll always be with you just like your father. If we don't get Luke's Force Ghost, I'll be very surprised. Like,
well, especially since we won't get Carrie, right? I think that they have to make some decisions about who plays representative from the Skywalker legacy. And I think it can only be two people. Yeah. Two people can play that representative. Luke, maybe it's both. Luke or Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
As Anakin Skywalker healed. However, if you are of the Anadala camp, Kylo is Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, so that could.
And that's not going to happen. But if it's not, then I'm cool with Hayden Christensen having a cameo and having a good actor's director showing him how to be thoughtful and old and all of those things and have lived that life.
Or just see one thing and then have everything else be implied. Totally fine with that. Totally fine with seeing the back of Hayden Christensen's head when he was a Force Ghost at the end of, all of that. And then have, like, the look on Kylo's face and then not show anything else. And, like, have just, like, this, you know, constant speculation for the rest of time. What was he told? I would love that. I love when things are not explicitly told. I like things being filled in.
Oh, but you would have so many people on the internet having their heads explode.
That's so great.
They have to. No, it's amazing. And I like it because it's plot bunny for fan fiction writers.
Exactly.
It's plot bunnies for artists. It's these like transformational fans get so much joy about the spaces between.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We got so much good art from Last Jedi. We got so much good, you know, like fan fiction stuff, like fan art. Oh my goodness. I love it.
Like comics?
Oh, yeah.
Funny comics.
My goodness.
Funny comics. Keep it up, guys. We love you.
Totally.
Okay, let's talk about deleted scenes. But because we're running out of time for this episode, we're going to limit ourselves to a single statement about each deleted scene. And then we're going to say which scene we wish, after we go through them, we're going to say which scene we wish was still in the movie.
Cool. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. The alternative opening where Finn was the fake planet.
I agree with Ryan. It was too clever for his own good.
I have two words. Good cut. Okay. Paige gun jam. Okay. Paige's gun jams.
Unnecessary?
I liked it. Okay. Luke. Luke has a moment.
Oh. Unnecessary, but it would have been cool to have it in there.
Okay, Finn and Poe and their bromance.
Oh, with the jackets!
Yeah.
I consider it canon.
Uh-huh. It makes me want to ship them more. Okay, next one. It's kind of weird that you recorded that.
Too much.
Yeah, BB-8, stop being creepy. Caretaker Village 1. She had just blown up the hut. They got into an argument with her.
It's a hard one. Some parts of it I liked and I wish would have made it in the movie. And then I understand why it didn't.
It was cute. Yeah. Caretaker Village number 2/The Third Lesson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I really like the part where Luke and Rey are talking. But I get it. I get why it was cut.
I'm disappointed because we had John Williams' music of a fish wedding.
Yes.
And we didn't get to keep it in the movie. That is my only disappointment. Mm-hmm. Extended father scene.
The sauna.
Oh, the sauna. What's your thoughts?
The one I...
That's sauna? It? That's it? Is that what you're saying? Just like you wanted to see aliens in the sauna?
I loved that scene. I loved that scene so much it hurts. I don't know why. I could actually tell you why, but okay. That sauna scene.
You get a little bit more for this one because I'm interested.
This is the one I wish would have made it into the movie.
Okay. Wait. We'll go back to it.
Okay.
And then I'll say I'm okay with this being cut because that father scene went on way
That's
too
true.
Long.
I agree.
Ugh. Okay. Mega Destroyer.
What was Mega Destroyer?
It was.
Oh, was that the part where they're walking through the administrative section?
Yeah.
I like that. I take it as canon, but I get why it was cut.
I love it when we see the Empire and it's like how they get stuff done / the First Order. So I'm happy. I understand why it was cut, but it was cool to be able to see it.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, we also got to see in that one the Chris Hardy cut scene. And he was like a redneck. Or something. Like, he had a weird accent.
Yeah, he did have a weird accent.
He had a weird accent. But I love that he kind of, like, was Finn's friend. Yeah. That was cute.
That was strange.
Rose bites the hand that... taunts her. What's that one for you?
I'm glad it was cut. It was weird.
Hux is creepy. Mm-hmm. Rose is scrappy. Mm-hmm. Yarp. and then the Phasma... alt ending for Phasma. Mm-hmm. She lost a hand.
Yeah.
She, wow, that was different. That was my line.
Yeah, that, I like the other one better. Ooh. Ouch.
All right, sauna scene, go.
Okay, wish the sauna scene would have made it into the final cut. I think we could have done without some of the, like, alleyway shots, but they worked so hard on them. Like, they really did work so hard on those alleyway shots. I get it. And like the explosions and stuff they felt were necessary. I don't know why, but they felt like the narrow hallway thing was necessary with the lights. I wish they would have cut some of that and then given us the sauna scene, because what's the actor that's been in like every movie?
Warwick Davis.
Yeah, he was in that scene. And I feel it's such a tragedy that he was cut. But then also the creature designs in that scene, like aesthetically, that was the coolest creature design stuff I saw for the whole film. Even like from the fish people, I don't know why I love it so much. I think it's because of the, again, kind of like that weird, sexual, grotesque, beautiful, layered aesthetic that we're getting. I loved it. I wish that would have stayed in there. I thought it was so cool. Is that weird?
No. I think it's fine. I'm gonna talk about Luke's scene. Yeah. Luke breaking
has
down after he finds out that Han has passed, and because of his choices his friend is dead. That needed to be in the movie. It was like 4 seconds long. Ryan, you could have fit it in. It would have humanized Luke and made him feel like he was regretful for his decisions, but that he was fully behind his decisions, even though he now needed to suffer because of the consequences.
Yeah.
There we go. So that was The Last Jedi
bonus
features with Ty Black and Marie Claire. your hosts through the wonders that were this. We talked a long time because we like to talk to each other. And yeah, that was it. So Ty, where can they find you?
People can find me on YouTube at Wit and Folly, WIT. And that's how you spell wit in this case. And then you can also find me on Twitter at @black_TYM. And yeah, I like Star Wars.
And I have been Marie Claire Gould, and this has been What the Force. We are available at WT4Show on Twitter. WhatTheForce.ca is our website, and you can find us wherever podcasts are usually found. Thank you for joining us in this conversation. And if you want to chat with us more about these topics, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter or on the website and start a conversation. Cheers.